Great. Let's turn in our Bibles then to Matthew's Gospel and chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. We've been singing this evening about how our God reigns. He's the King of all the earth. Our God reigns. He's seated on the throne. Lift your voice. Sing a song of praise. Our God reigns. The awesome God Most High. That's our God. He reigns and he's got a kingdom. He's a king with a kingdom. And in Matthew chapter 13 that we've been in for a couple of weeks now, because we've been exploring the parables of the kingdom, we've seen how God's reign functions, how it works. Tonight we're going to be looking at verses 47 to the end of the chapter. How does God's kingdom work? How does God rule? Because remember that the kingdom of God is not like a geographic boundary that you can say, there is the kingdom of God. Rather, it's dynamic, it's action, it's God in action, it's God ruling, God reigning. It's how God rules rather than where God rules. So Jesus is teaching us about the function of the kingdom, how God reigns. When you start a new job, you might know a little bit about the company that you've joined, but you're going to know some more. And you want to know about that company or that business. You want to know, how does it work? How does it function? You want to know the values that you read about on their website. You want to know how they practice in action there in that company. You want to know about the managers. How do the managers manage? What's their style? And you want to know a little bit about the owner of that company and to know, well, how does that owner rule in that company? And you'll go on an inductive course, maybe for days or maybe for a week, to find out how that various business functions. Well, what Jesus is doing in these parables in the kingdom of God is like an inductive course to the kingdom. He's telling us how God rules, how God reigns, how his exercise is seen. And we've seen that in each one of these parables where Jesus has said, the kingdom of heaven is like, this is what it's like, I'm going to teach you how God rules. Now tonight then, we've got three things. We've got a parable, we've got a saying, and we've got an offense. So let's first of all look at the parable. This is in verses 47 to 50. Let's read. Once again, Jesus is speaking, the King of Kings, the King of the Kingdom. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like. What? It's like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but threw the bad away. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, this parable of the net is quite similar to the parable of the weeds that we looked at a few weeks ago in verses 24 to 30. But the parable of the net focuses on one thing. It focuses on what God's rule is like at the end of the age. The parable of the weeds that we looked at showed us that God allowed the righteous and the wicked to coexist side by side in his world because God showed them grace and mercy and patience and tolerance. That was the main point of that parable. But the main point of this parable is that though God allows people to exist side by side, the righteous and the wicked, there will come a day when God will sort out the righteous and the wicked. So the observation Jesus makes is a fishing story in verses 47 and 48. Jesus would have observed this scene very often during his ministry and life by the Lake of Galilee. He speaks about this net that's let down. Now this net could have been up to half a mile long. It would have been attached to two boats, and it would have been weighted at the bottom so it would sunk to the sea bed. And the boats would have trawled it along, and then it would have caught every kind of fish as it went along, both good fish and bad fish. And that's the function of the net, just to trawl along and catch anything in its way. Then when they were over their trawling, They would go to the beachside, pull up their boats, and then they would sort out the fish within that net. All kinds of fish without discrimination would be caught, but then the sorting out begins. And Jesus says this in verse 48. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but threw the bad away. That actually happened as Jesus observed life. But what's it teaching us? How can we see the reign of God and the rule of God through that observation? Well, the meaning is clear. In verses 49 to 50, Jesus says, this is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's a great separation that's coming. Now, in this parable, Jesus is not teaching about the missionary activity of the church, going out to catch all kinds of fish. Nor is he teaching about the patience and grace and mercy that God shows and that we must show to all kinds of people. He's already taught that in a previous parable. Rather, he's teaching here that judgment day is coming. And on that judgment day, there will be a sorting out of the righteous and the wicked. Those are the words that Jesus uses in verse 49. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous. This is how God's rule works. He permits people to live side by side now, but there comes a time, there comes a day when God will sort out the righteous from the wicked. Now you can follow that up in Matthew chapter 25. We shan't turn to it tonight because of heat. But in Matthew chapter 25, in verses 31 to 46, Jesus speaks about the parable of the sheep and the goats once again, where there is this division at the end of the age. For on that day, on that judgment day, when God sends out his angels, the secrets of the hearts of people will be made known and revealed. And then it will be very clear who's righteous and who's wicked. Now that's how God works. His rule is exercised in patience now, but there will be a judgment day to come. And that means that after that judgment day, when the wicked and the righteous are sorted out, and when the wicked go to the place prepared for them, and the righteous go to the place prepared for them, that will be a fantastic world. Jesus spoke about it as heaven on earth. He referred to it as like a paradise, a place where nothing will enter in that will harm or destroy on all his holy mountain. A place where nothing will distress the righteous. A place where there is no sin, no injustice, no harming, no death, no mourning, no tears. And that's what the righteous will have to look forward to. A world where everything is absolutely perfect. And the kingdom of God is like this. The rule of God will ensure that one day there will be total joy and perfection for those who are righteous. That's the parable. That's quickly followed up by a saying. The saying is in verses 51 and 52. There's a question and answer situation that goes on now. And Jesus asks them an important question in verse 51. Have you understood all these things? Jesus asked. Now he does that because back in verse 36, they came to him and they said, Lord, explain these things to us. So Jesus does, and now he asks them, have you understood? And their happy reply in verse 51 is, yes, they replied. We understand these things. Great, they've got it. Well, now that they understand how the kingdom of God works, then now that they've received that revelation of that mystery, now there's something they must do with that knowledge. So they understand. Now they've got a responsibility. It's always like that, isn't it? If you understand something, you have a responsibility to act in the light of that understanding. So do you understand all these things? Yes, right. Here's what's next, Jesus says in verse 52. Therefore, every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old. It's like another parable that Jesus is speaking here. And again, this would have been literal. This would have been an observation he made. There's an owner of the house. He's got a storeroom. And in that storeroom, there's old things and there's new things, old treasures and new treasures. And the owner of the house will bring out those old and new things and give them away. That's the idea of this parable, generosity. The observation is there, it's clear. You might be interested that the word for storeroom there in verse 52 in Greek is the word thesaurus, which you've probably got in your home, is on your bookshelves. A thesaurus, it's full of a treasury of words, and you bring them out. And that's the word that's used here. It's a treasure store that we bring out. What's the meaning? What's the storeroom? Well, the storeroom is our mind. It's our heart. There are things that are treasured up in there about the kingdom of God that we can bring out when we understand them. So have you understood these things? Yes, right. They're treasures in your heart. Bring them out for other people. That's the idea. Now, there's two points of interest in verse 52. And the first point of interest is that Jesus speaks about every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven. And that's a point of interest because we're not sure as to who this teacher of the law is that's become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven. There are two thoughts. It could be one of the Jewish teachers of the law, one of the scribes. You know, in the New Testament, there were Pharisees, there were Sadducees, there were priests, there were Levites, there were scribes, there were teachers of the law. And the teachers of the law gave themselves to studying the law of Moses. That's what their life was all about. They were to study, 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 and then they would teach it. And Jesus might be referring to them, that they became a disciple when they trusted Jesus. They become a disciple in the kingdom of God. And you read about that in the Acts of the Apostles. It's full of these people, these scribes becoming Christians. It's great. So Jesus could be referring to them. Or he could be referring in Jesus' provocative way and saying, if you're a disciple in the kingdom of heaven, then you're a teacher of the law. Might be. Point of interest number two is this new and old treasures in verse 52. The owner of the storeroom brings out treasures old and new. What are they? Well, that's referring to the Old and the New Testament. See, the teachers of the law, before they're Christians, can only bring things out of the Bible of the Old Testament if they don't understand the New Testament. But when someone becomes a disciple of Jesus, they can bring out things both from the Old Testament and the New Testament. And they are treasures. Treasures. And that's our responsibility. That as we've received God's teaching, God's revelation, and as we understand it from Old and New Testaments, then it's our responsibility and our privilege to bring out these things for the blessing of other people. That's a wonderful thought, isn't it? That Jesus speaks about the treasures of the Old Testament and the treasures of the New Testament. Freely we have received and freely we give. These things are in the storeroom of our hearts and minds. We understand them, we give them away. Well, third and final thing is this, the offense. The offense. And this is in verses 53 to 58. This is the rejection at Nazareth. This is really sad. Jesus is now on a journey. We read in verse 53 that when Jesus had finished these parables, he moved on from there. This was the life of Jesus. He often moved around. He didn't stay in one place for very long at all. He had this roving ministry. He went to the towns and the villages, especially around Galilee. Well, he decides now to go home. In verse 54, coming to his hometown. I wonder what his feelings and emotions were when he went back to his hometown. How do you feel when you go back to the place where you were born? It does produce within us, doesn't it, all kinds of emotions, all kinds of memories. I remember once going up to a conference in Bala, in North Wales, the Evangelical Movement of Wales conference up there. And I travelled up with three Welshmen in the car. My mistake. Sorry, Tim. Three Welshmen in the car. We travelled up, and as soon as we got to the border, it's like, these Welshmen, they said, oh, the sky is bluer, The grass is greener, the air is fresher, we're home. I said, well, take me back over the border. But it was a good conference. But I didn't go back, so they spoke in Welsh most of the time. Well, how do you feel when you go home? There are emotions that come up within you, aren't there? Happy memories, sad memories. Jesus goes to his hometown, born in Bethlehem, raised in Nazareth. He goes home. And as he's there, he enters their synagogue. We read in verse 54, coming to his own town, he began teaching the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed. Now, that's the very synagogue where he'd been rejected beforehand, and they tried to kill him. Things now might have calmed down a little bit, but still there was an edginess about it. He's back in that synagogue, and he's teaching the synagogue he would have gone to as a little boy, that his mum would have taken him to, and Joseph would have taken him to. He's back to his boyhood, and now he's teaching in that synagogue. And as he teaches, then there's a reaction from his hometown people. And it says, they were amazed. Why were they amazed at his teaching? Well, we're amazed at the teaching of Jesus, aren't we? It's fantastic teaching. But they were amazed for this reason. Look what they say at the end of verse 54. Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers, they asked? Isn't this the carpenter's son? Isn't his mum's name Mary? And aren't his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? And aren't his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things? They couldn't work it out. He's the carpenter's son. He hasn't been to university. He hasn't been to a school of education. He's been to the synagogue school, but he hasn't gone to like higher education. Where did he get these things? His dad was a carpenter. Now, the Greek word for carpenter is not just someone that like made table and chairs, but rather the idea is like he was someone who had built houses, did the whole thing, did masonry as well as woodwork. So Joseph was a very clever man with his hands, and Jesus would have learnt that trade as well. And they're saying that he's a builder, he's a carpenter. How can he be teaching us these things? They're amazed at it. But then strangely, they take offense, verse 57. And they took offense at him. It's how quick people are to change. One moment they're saying, wow! The next moment they're saying, you don't like this. No, they took offense at him. They were amazed at him. They took offense at him. And instead of him becoming a stepping stone to heaven for them, he became a stumbling block in their pathway. And this offense that they take at him is the opposite of faith. Well, that makes Jesus say this famous proverb in verse 57. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own town and his own home. It was a sad homecoming. No faith, just offense. Verse 58 sums it all up. And he did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. See, they acknowledge his wisdom, they acknowledge his powers, but they reject his claim and they will not put their faith in him. Therefore, he did not do many miracles in that place. It's not that their lack of faith emptied him of his power, but it is rather that he refused to do the miracles in that place because of their lack of faith. Spurgeon says this, why should Jesus spend his sacred energy among a people who would not be profited thereby? He did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. What you have here in verses 53 to verse 58, it's like a game of consequences. Boy's name, Jesus. Their name, the Nazareths. Where did they meet? In the synagogue. He said lots of old and lots of new things. They said, wow. He did teaching. They took offense, and the consequence was he didn't do many miracles there. It's really sad. See, there is a link between our faith and God's power. I'm not fully sure what that link is, but I know it's there. A link between our faith and God's power. Our faith bluetooths over to God's power and makes a connection. And it does so in many ways. If you have faith, then you'll be saved. If you don't have faith, you won't be saved. There is a connection. Where there was a lot of faith, there were many miracles. Where there wasn't a lot of faith, there's a distinct lack of miracles. Faith plugs into the almighty power of God. I don't know how that connection works, but I know it works. I've read about it, and I've seen it in action. People who launch out in faith often see God do amazing things. Those who do not have faith have very small worlds. See, faith looks up to God. Faith is not occupied with difficulties, but with the God to whom all things are possible. Faith is not occupied with circumstances, but with the God of the circumstances. Faith lifts our eyes to God. There is a connection between faith and the power of God. He did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. James Hudson Taylor, not the singer, but the missionary, started up the China Inland Mission, and a great man of faith. And he said this: how many estimate difficulties in the light of their own resources and thus attempt little? Faith can move mountains, but lack of faith disconnects us from the almighty power of God. Well, these are the three things that we learned from the end of Matthew chapter 13. The parable that shows how God rules. There will be a world for the righteous. A saying that shows that we who understand these things can bring treasures out of the Old and New Testament, and the offense. Let's make sure that we are people of faith who trust God. And because all those three things are really different, and I couldn't find a song or a hymn to sum them all up, I've chosen my favorite to end with. So let's stand to sing of A Wonderful Love.